Well, the Federal Reserve has scheduled an open market committee meeting for the 25th and 26th of September. And on the 26th of September, they are going to have a media conference as well as a statement on monetary policy. Now, of course, these Federal Open Market Committee meetings are very, very important because it is in these meetings that interest rate policy is decided. Now, we have these meetings roughly every 6 weeks, and they are, depending on what happens at the meeting, they can be an influential event for the markets. Now, if investors have a good idea of what's going to come out of the meeting, and that's what comes out of the meeting, then it's not a big deal. If there's a surprise or a big surprise at one of the meetings, then that can be a big deal. In any case, we follow the Federal Open Market Committee closely, and we follow their meeting calendar and the results of those meetings closely as well. Obviously, there's a lot of speculation about what is going to happen at this next meeting, which concludes on September 26th. This will be a pajama party. The committee members will convene on the 25th. They will have a sleepover. And then on the 26th, following the pajama party, they will have their follow-up meeting and make their decision on what they're going to do about interest rates. They will then issue their Federal Open Market Committee communique in the form of an FOMC statement. And in that statement, they will provide information on any changes in interest rates and or any changes in monetary policy or guidance. Now, right now, the Federal Open Market Committee is working on two fronts. And this is unusual. In fact, it's close to unprecedented if you go back many, many decades, for the Federal Open Market Committee to be functioning on two fronts at the same time. They have a lot on their plate right now. On one front, they're dealing with interest rate normalization. Interest rate normalization is a big deal to the Federal Open Market Committee because during the last recession, they drove rates down essentially to zero, which meant that they couldn't really take them any lower because here in the United States, our central bankers have never really bought into the negative interest rate theory. So they have not gone to the negative interest rate solution that has been used in some other areas. They never even went there. And I'm talking here about the nominal rate, the actual rate that they set. So they did take it down to essentially zero, though. The bottom level on the federal funds rate, the overnight rate that banks charge one another for excess reserves when they want to fill up their reserve account, they did take it down to the range of 0 to 25 basis points, otherwise known as 0 to 1 quarter of 1%. And for the most part, when a 25 basis point range is established for the federal funds rate, the rate changes hands close to the middle of that. Now, it fluctuates within the band, but it generally tends to change hands in the middle of that, which would be about 1/8 of 1% at the bottom when you had the 0 to 25 basis point range, which we had for a long time, for years, many, many years. We had this 0 to 25 basis point range, and for the most part, the federal funds rate day in and day out was fluctuating close to the 1/8 of 1% midpoint of that range. Well, that's all changed. We have already had 7 1/4 of 1% interest rate increases going back to the final month of 2015, which is less than 3 years ago. We've already had 7 hikes, all of the hikes were identical amounts, 0.25% or 25 basis points. And that's the reason that the current range on the federal funds rate is 1.75% to 2%. And if you check the federal funds rate during the day, very frequently you will find it's trading close to 1.875%. Why? Because 1.875% is the midpoint between 1.75% and 2%. And I can remember checking it and saying, oh, it's 1.9. Well, it's a couple of basis points away from the midpoints. And that's what it does. It fluctuates within that range. Well, on September 26th, the expectation, the very, very strong expectation is that the Federal Open Market Committee is going to announce another rate increase, which would be rate increase number 8 in this ongoing rate normalization cycle. And this is the rate the Fed controls tightly, which is, and directly, which is the federal funds rate. And all the other short-term rates derive from how the Fed establishes the federal funds rate, which is a, really should be viewed as a daily rate. And that's what we're looking at here. So on the assumption that expectations are correct, and I think they are correct, we should expect that on the 26th of September, in the 2 to 3 o'clock Eastern PM time, we should expect that we're going to get an announcement from the Federal Reserve that the federal funds rate has increased again. This time it will be in a new range when this happens of 2 to 2.25%. 2 to 2.25%. And then the question becomes, what will happen at the December Federal Open Market Committee meeting? Now, we have enough economic data here to know that the Fed has a really good handle on the economy. Things are looking healthy in the third quarter. We're expecting to get a good GDP number in the third quarter. And so there's enough information out there that the Federal Reserve can go ahead and make their rate increase announcement on the 26th of September. And that will take that rate into the 2 to 2.25% area. And then once that happens, all the attention will go to the December meeting. Because although there is a November meeting, I think the chances of any interest rate action at the November meeting are slim and none. And I do believe that was slim that was seen leaving the building. So I don't expect any interest rate activity in November from the meeting that occurs in November. But at the December meeting, we would have to say, based on what we know now, that it is probable that the Federal Open Market Committee will announce an additional interest rate hike at that December meeting. Now, if that happens, then in the month of December, we could see the federal funds rate at the 2.25% to 2.5% level, which again is another step in this ongoing process at the Federal Reserve known as interest rate normalization. But what happens after that? Well, if the economy continues to grow, then I think the expectation would be that we could see additional rate increases in 2019. How many is debatable? It certainly would be reasonable to say that you could see 2 or 3 rate increases, additional ones, in 2019. Now, if you did get 2, if we get a September and a December, and then you did get 2 next year, you'd be at 2.75% to 3%. If you got 3 next year, you'd be to 3 to 3.25%. The reason I mention this is, based on their current forecasting, the Federal Open Market Committee is expecting the neutral rate for federal funds would be at about 3%. Now, the neutral rate, of course, is the rate at which interest rate policy is not having an impact on the growth rate of the economy. The neutral rate for short-term rates, and that's what we're talking about here, the neutral rate would be a rate at which the economy could continue to expand without interference from short-term interest rates. And so when the Federal Open Market Committee speaks about neutral federal funds policy or neutral interest rate policy, that's exactly what they're talking about. That the economy continues to go on its merry way at the rate of growth that has been occurring, and it is not impeded by interest rate policy. That's what they mean when they talk about neutral in that context. So what about the economic growth rate? Well, right now, the rate we look at, there's one rate that all economists focus on, and that is the year-over-year real rate of growth in total goods and services, which is gross domestic product. So what is the real rate of growth adjusted for inflation? Right now, it's 2.8%. Now, the long-term rate, going back to the end of World War II, is about 3.2%. So, yes, the economy is growing below the long-term growth trend. But, hey, it's had a long slog coming back from the financial crisis in 2008. It's taken many, many years for it. It's been growing approximately 2.2% until the last year. Now it's up to 2.8%. And, of course, it has been battling headwinds along the way. It's battling the headwinds. There are two in particular that it battles. The lack of population growth. Population growth has been minuscule. As you know, the birth rate in the United States is at a 30-year low. That's not the kind of thing that changes overnight. So it's been battling the very, very low birth rate and the very, very low population growth. That's one thing it's been battling. The other thing it's been battling, which is very important, is the lack of productivity growth. If you go back over the last several years, we have had an annual rate of productivity growth of less than 1%. Less than 1%. So here you have these two key ingredients to long-term GDP growth that are just slogging along at very low rates, population growth and productivity growth. So the fact is, for real GDP to be up 2.8% on a year-over-year basis, that's a very good result when you have basic ingredients like the ones I just described. So that is certainly a healthy rate of growth for an economy that has very little population growth and below trend productivity growth. So all of these factors come into play. And the reason I feel that way is I remember so well what happened at the end of 1999 and the beginning of year 2000, when we saw a very, very high level of investor complacency come into the market. And what happened there was people came to believe, especially as we started in January of year 2000, people started to believe that it was really a one-way market. You know, we had had a tremendous five-year run leading up to that, and virtually an unprecedented five-year run leading up to that. And people came to believe that there really was only one thing the stock market could do, and that would be go up every year. And they really, once they started to convince themselves of that, they became highly complacent, meaning they took a lot of risk. Maybe, in a lot of cases, more risk than they should be taking. Well, we saw what happened in year 2000, year 2001, year 2002. We saw basically a 50% drop, roughly a 50% drop in the S&P 500. And so that complacency was not a good idea. And what I'm expressing, you know, we've had a tremendous run in the market. So what I'm expressing in that passage is simply to say it's always a good idea to be in the category where you're not being complacent about your investments. And therefore, just because we've had an incredible run, an almost unprecedented run since the spring of 2009, where we have literally seen the S&P 500 more than triple in value. In fact, I'll tell you what, as of right now, it has more than quadrupled in value. I mean, that's flat out incredible. It has more than quadrupled. Think about this.
Yes.
More than quadrupled in value since the spring of 2009. Therefore, with that kind of a run that we're in, I think it's a good idea for subscribers, and that was addressed to subscribers, to try not to become overly complacent about investing. That's what I was saying.
I understand. I understand. And you are you believe in the theory that a successful portfolio is the management of risk and not necessarily on profits. Then,
well, that's certainly profits are wonderful, and profits should be part of a portfolio over time. But I do think your point is very well taken, Victor. That consciousness of risk is a good idea. Because if you're not conscious of the risk that you're taking, you could wind up like somebody in late 99, right? Just saying, well, the market only goes up. It's there really is no risk because look at it. It's gone up five straight years. By the way, we had five consecutive years in the mid to late 90s, all through 99 inclusive. We had five consecutive years of large gains in both the S&P 500 index and also in the total stock market index. I mean, it was truly an amazing run. But after you've had a run like that, there's a temptation, and I understand why people get tempted to become complacent. That's why I think it's a really good idea to remember that it's probably not a good idea at all to become complacent about investing, because then your point comes into play. You also become complacent about risk. And when you become complacent about risk, what can happen is you can wind up taking more risk, or maybe even way, way more risk than is appropriate. And I especially think about those that are in balanced portfolios. Let's say an investor that's approaching or in retirement years. I mean, my opinion is they really need to be giving very, very strong consideration to having a balanced investment approach so that they're not going to be in a situation, as many were, that got just absolutely clobbered in that 2000, 2001, 2002 period, where they went into that bloated market with way too much risk. And they had to pay the price on that. Now, keep in mind that the valuation of that market was flat out insane. In January of 2000, the S&P 500 index was trading at a price earnings ratio on operating earnings of close to 30 times earnings. Think about it. Close to 30 times earnings. I mean, it was insane. And we know what happened.